From NPR News, this is a special report. It's day three of the debate over a non-binding resolution on Iraq in the House of Representatives. I'm Paul Brown. Here's how the resolution reads. Resolved by the House of Representatives, the Senate concurring that Congress and the American people will continue to support and protect the members of the United States Armed Forces who are serving or who have served bravely and honorably in Iraq. And Congress disapproves of the decision of President George W. Bush announced on January 10, 2007, to deploy more than 20,000 additional United States combat troops to Iraq. President Bush has said, resolution or no, he's going ahead with his plan to add 21,500 American troops to Iraq. And in fact, the so-called troop surge has already begun, as has a campaign to secure Baghdad. But the president appears to be paying attention to the debate. Yesterday, he held his first news conference in 2 months, automatically claiming some media time for himself and his views. And today, he mentioned the debate in a speech in Washington.
A vigorous debate is healthy for our country, really is, and I welcome the debate. It's one of the true hallmarks of a free society where people can get up and express their beliefs in an open forum.
The resolution under debate is expected to pass the new Democratic-controlled House tomorrow. Yesterday, some Republican members openly broke with the president and spoke in favor of the measure. Today, Democrats again urged a yes vote and a new course for the nation in Iraq. The president's Republican supporters put forward several military veterans from their ranks. They argued that a yes vote would amount to a vote of no confidence in the troops and would embolden America's enemies. A little later in the hour, we'll be talking with NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving, but we begin with the debate itself today. Here's Democratic Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of Illinois. She said President Bush and his advisors aren't living in the real world.
I rise on behalf of my constituents in Illinois to say as strongly as possible for myself and for them that we reject President Bush's decision to deploy more than 20,000 additional United States combat troops to Iraq. Tragically, the president and his administration are dealing with an Iraq that exists only in their imagination.
Schakowsky then went on through a litany of what she described as Bush administration failures.
May 2003, President Bush declared mission accomplished. By the end of 2003, 486 of our troops were dead and 2,408 were wounded, and yet we stayed the course in Iraq. In June 2004, President Bush said, quote, "We're handing over authority to a sovereign Iraqi government. A turning point will come in less than 2 weeks," unquote. By the end of 2004, 1,334 of our troops were killed and 10,408 were wounded, and yet we stayed the course in Iraq. In June 2005, Vice President Cheney said, "I think they're in the last throes, if you will, of the insurgency." And in December 2005, President Bush said, quote, "The year 2005 will be recorded as a turning point in the history of Iraq, the history of the Middle East, and the history of freedom," unquote. By the end of 2005, 2,180 of our troops were killed and 16,354 were wounded, and yet we stayed the course in Iraq. In May 2006, President Bush called the formation of a new Iraqi government a turning point. By the end of 2006, 3,001 of our troops were killed and 22,736 were wounded, and yet we'd stayed the course in Iraq. And just last month, Vice President Cheney proclaimed, "Well, I think if you look at what's transpired in Iraq, we have in fact made enormous progress," unquote. And President Bush told us that his new strategy to escalate the war in Iraq, quote, "will change America's course in Iraq and help us succeed in the fight against terror," unquote. Since those remarks, made just days ago, more than 120 troops are dead. And yet, once again, we are being asked to stay the course in Iraq.
That's Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat from Illinois. Another Democrat, Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, faulted the previous Republican-led Congress.
"For almost 4 years after the invasion, the president had a rubber-stamped Congress right here that never seriously questioned his misguided policies in Iraq. It was the see no problems, hear no problems, conduct no oversight Congress. When the president stood below the banner, mission accomplished, aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln in May 2003, the rubber stamp Congress believed the slogans rather than the facts on the ground. When Vice President Cheney declared that the insurgency was in its, quote, final throes back in May 2005, The Republican Congress accepted that verdict without question. When the President unveiled his so-called plan for victory at the Naval Academy in November 2005, the old Congress dutifully parroted the talking points sent down from the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. The days of the rubber stamp Congress are now over.
Democrat Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, fellow Democrat Lloyd Doggett of Texas dismissed Republican claims that the resolution would demoralize U.S. troops.
The words of our adversaries in this debate have often been very sharp. But you know, their true conflict is not really with us, it's with reality. They are in a losing war with the truth. Iraq has never been the central front in the war on terrorism, like the alleged connection with 9/11 in Iraq, like the claim that Saddam's nuclear mushroom was looming just over the horizon. This charge is but another falsehood falsed off on the gullible. The central front on the war on terrorism was largely abandoned by President Bush in his ideological rush to invade Iraq. Vital resources and expertise that were needed to capture Osama bin Laden and the terrorist who caused 9/11 were cut in Afghanistan when President Bush ran into Iraq. The real war on terrorism suffered a major setback from which today it has still never recovered. That is the only cut and run that now endangers our families. Nor does this debate in the People's House embolden the enemies of democracy when we exercise democracy here in America. To me, the terrorists seem mighty emboldened with their daily death and destruction that they wreaked across the Middle East long before anyone ever conceived of this resolution. Frankly, it is the administration that is the terrorist top recruiter.
Democratic Congressman Lloyd Doggett of Texas speaking during today's House debate on a non-binding resolution expressing disapproval for the president's troop surge in Iraq. Republican Representative Tom Cole of Oklahoma was one of the many Republicans who insisted the measure will give comfort to America's enemies.
Believe me, there are consequences to losing the war, and these are real. If we are not successful in Iraq, we will have an emboldened enemy, not just the terrorists that we deal with, they're bad enough, but also the states that use terrorism as a tool of diplomacy. States like Iran, states like Syria will draw comfort. We'll have demoralized friends in the region and around the world that wonder whether or not they can really count on us once we make a commitment. We will see the death of an infant democracy, never a good thing for the lovers of freedom. We will see a sectarian bloodbath in Iraq that will result in the death of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Iraqis. And we'll see a destabilized region in which the United States has vital interests and to which our own security is intimately tied.
Republican Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma during today's debate in the House on the non-binding Iraq resolution. Republicans who are veterans of military service had a big presence today. Among them was Representative Jeff Davis of Kentucky.
This resolution does not help make progress in Iraq, it does not provide a new approach in Iraq, and does not make our nation or our troops more secure. That's what we need to be doing, not wasting our time debating a measure that can dishearten and demoralize our citizens faithfully serving in theater while encouraging and emboldening the adversaries of stability. We've seen the aggression of this faceless and cowardly enemy in the bombing of Pan Am 103 in 1988, in al-Qaeda's attack on the USS Cole in 2000, and then in the tragic events of September 11th. This enemy is driven by hate and seeks to do Americans harm. Over the course of time, it has become evident that we are involved in a long-term struggle with Islamic extremism to preserve our freedom and the freedom of the world. Every day, our men and women in uniform and our civilian professionals risk their lives to protect our freedom. From providing security to building an economy, we're strengthening the security of our country and the international community. We've not had a terrorist attack on our soil in over 5 years because of our vigilance in pursuing the security of our nation at home and abroad. Success in Iraq is our only option for continued national security and the preservation of freedom.
That's Republican Jeff Davis of Kentucky, an Army veteran who opposes the Iraq resolution. Another veteran, Sam Johnson of Texas, was a floor manager for the Republicans today. An Air Force pilot, he was taken prisoner of war in Vietnam. Today, he drew a parallel between potential failure in Iraq and the U.S. defeat in Vietnam. The non-binding resolution under debate expresses support for the troops, but for Johnson, it was a first step toward pulling the rug out from under them.
As you can imagine, the North Vietnamese would say and do anything to break our will. The physical torture is not fit for describing, as some of it is too graphic and too gory. There were many times I would pray to God that I would pass out and slip into unconsciousness just to escape the pain that if I couldn't escape the beatings. Yet, what also scarred me for life was the emotional torture that the North Vietnamese broadcast to taunt us and break our wills. They constantly blared anti-American messages from back home over the loudspeakers. The enemy knows that any anti-American murmur can be used as a weapon, and the same holds true today. The enemy wants our men and women in uniform to think that their Congress doesn't care about them. They want to cut the funding and abandon them and their mission. They want Congress to cave to the wishes of those who advocate a cut-and-run attitude, and we should not allow that to happen. We must learn from our mistakes. We cannot leave a job undone like we left in Korea, like we left in Vietnam, like we left in Somalia. Osama bin Laden said that in Somalia, the United States pulled out, trailing disappointment, defeat, and failure behind it.
That's Republican Sam Johnson of Texas. This is a special report from NPR News on the continuing debate in the House of Representatives over a non-binding resolution on Iraq. The resolution disapproves of President Bush's troop surge in Iraq, but expresses support for the troops. This is a special report from NPR News on the continuing debate in the House of Representatives on a resolution expressing disapproval of President Bush's troop increase in Iraq. This non-binding resolution also expresses support for the troops. It does not address the politically more difficult issue of funding for the troops in Iraq or for the Iraq War. I'm Paul Brown. The resolution is expected to pass in a vote tomorrow. The November election that brought Democrats into the majority in the House on widespread discontent with conduct of the Iraq War. There have been some sharp exchanges between Democrats in favor of the resolution and Republicans now in the minority who are opposed. Congresswoman Jane Harman of California said the current military commitment is misguided.
The actions taken 4 years ago in Iraq created a failed state. We took out its government and occupied the country unsuccessfully. About a year later, millions of Iraqis courageously elected a government. But that government barely functions, and we continue to occupy Iraq militarily. Mr. Speaker, there are no good military options left in Iraq. To the soldier currently in harm's way, I say, you are a hero. You are doing your best to follow orders and to serve your country. But I also say, we have given you a mission impossible, and that mission must change. We have a moral obligation to leave Iraq in better shape than we found it. And that will not be achieved by surging 21,500 more troops into Baghdad. The surge will not work, and I oppose it. But abandoning Iraq is not a viable alternative. We must invest in strategies to contain and ultimately reduce violence there in order to create stability in Iraq and in the region. That must now be our focus. The Iraq Study Group made important recommendations to do this, including changing the military mission in Iraq, tying future U.S. support to measurable progress on national reconciliation, security and governance, and aggressive diplomatic outreach to Iraq's neighbors, including Syria and Iran. But this administration rejected them.
Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman of California. Her comments brought a response from Republican Steve Pierce of New Mexico. Pierce is a Vietnam veteran, and like some other Republicans, he brought up memories of Vietnam as he challenged Democrats to bring the troops home if they think it's best. Pierce implied that would be more honest than promoting a resolution that he said opposes White House policy but does not adequately support troops.
In the last two speakers, I've heard that there is no good military action left. That's a credible viewpoint. It's one that is expressed. And yet I ask my friends, why did not you have the courage to simply say, if there are no good alternatives left for the military, then bring them home? That's fair and adequate. I have also heard that it's a misguided conflict. I've also heard that our soldiers' work is done. If their work is done, please have the courage to bring them home. I want to speak today, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of our soldiers, the soldiers of today. I'll do it while remembering the soldiers of yesterday. Through no fault of my own, I served in the Air Force during the Vietnam conflict. I say through no fault of my own because I was not a volunteer. I got there because I drew a very low draft number. As time has proved, it's going to be the only lottery that I'm going to win. But that lottery gave me a free pilot certificate and sent me to Vietnam to fly in 71, 72, and parts of 73. I was in Vietnam during the time that Jane Fonda made her trip to the North, giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I was in Vietnam during the time that there were demonstrations in the streets back home. I was there during the time that our soldiers were cursed at and spit on. And today, as I beat around the back dusty roads of New Mexico, I encounter those same soldiers that I encountered back then. Those soldiers who are my age, who are on walkers, life has been difficult. There's a common greeting for soldiers of that era. It's welcome home, brother, or welcome home, sister, because they were never thanked for their duty, and they were never welcomed home with parades, with yellow ribbons. We were snuck back in to the country. And I've brought a couple of photos to help us remember. Remember the people who were trying to get out of Saigon. Not Americans, but those people who had sided with us. They're crawling up the ladder trying to get into the helicopter. The helicopters proceeded out to carriers. The helicopters were then pushed off the side of the carriers. This is the way that we left Vietnam. I bring this up because I'm beginning to see the same thing today.
Representative Steve Pierce, Republican of New Mexico, he then raised the specter of Democrats defunding the troops in Iraq and drew a response from Democrat Gregory Meeks of New York.
My friends, you will not be able to appease the left with this toothless resolution that you're presenting. You know that your own members, some of your members have called for defunding. The defunding is going to allow the exit that looks like this. And it's going to allow the mass catastrophe, the mass killings that are going to occur. And that's all a part of the problem. But before you allow your friends who would never vote for me, who disrespect our soldiers so much, before you empower them and before you encourage them, I would recommend that you think carefully about just cleanly bringing our soldiers home. If you are going to do nothing in the resolution, you have an obligation to do no harm. This resolution does no harm. This resolution empowers our enemy, encourages our enemy, and encourages those people who are going to disrespect our soldiers. I recommend a vote against the resolution. The
gentleman's time has expired.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
From New York.
And I know of no one in this House, whether you be to the left or to the right, who does not believe in our troops and our soldiers, who do not respect them and honor them. And in fact, I think that by having every member having the opportunity to speak on this floor, to talk about their patriotism, is exactly what's supposed to happen on the People's House and in the People's House.
We've just heard Representative Gregory Meeks of New York, a Democrat, responding to Republican Steve Pierce of New Mexico. We're listening to excerpts from debate in the House of Representatives on a resolution on Iraq. The non-binding measure disapproves of President Bush's troop surge and expresses support for the troops. Joining us now is NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving. Ron, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be with you, Paul.
Ron, that was one emotional exchange we just heard there, bringing up all the emotions of the Vietnam era.
Yes, and earlier Sam Johnson of Texas talking about his experience as a prisoner of war in Vietnam and the discouragement that he felt at hearing about protests back in the United States. This is fertile ground in this particular Congress for bringing up some of the deepest disagreements between the parties and between the individuals. There were a number of Vietnam veterans who are serving in the Congress, but for every one of those real military veterans, there's half a dozen or more people for whom Vietnam was more of a campus conflict, something that they argued about with their friends in college and after college. And either way, it was the central political trauma for their most formative years. And oftentimes, when you hear debates in Congress, and this goes back well before the Iraq War began, it devolves into a debate over Vietnam.
Ron, it seems that to a certain extent, Democrats and many Republicans are talking past each other in this debate. Democrats have been talking about the resolution, about limiting the U.S. military involvement in Iraq, an Iraq where they see sectarian conflict, even civil war. And the Republicans keep painting Iraq as part of a larger war on terror, and today they drew parallels between Iraq and Vietnam. I thought we could listen to another Republican, an Army veteran, John Shimkus of Illinois. Here he reads emails from veterans and military personnel suggesting that a vote for the resolution is a vote against the troops.
John, my son is a Marine gunny sergeant embedded with the Iraqi army around Ramadi. Called a few weeks ago, I asked him if he knew about the president's plan for more troops. He hadn't heard about it, but his only comment to me was, "We can use them. Please support the president and the troops. Maybe our last best chance to win this thing. Winning is the imperative. Semper Fi." In another, "We have to let our generals be generals and wage this war as only they are trained to do, and have hope that the announced troop buildup will be the final key that's needed by the Iraqis to build a secure, a united country." And another, "We have to hope that it's not too late for the U.S. to make a difference in Iraq." And another, "We need to send the message to our troops that America wants them to succeed in Iraq by giving the buildup a chance to exceed." Still another, "My fellow guardsmen are ready. We will do whatever is asked of us. Please ensure that the resources, funds, and equipment continue to flow. Supporting the troops means giving us the means to do our job." And another, "We also need to stay in Iraq and put forth the necessary will and resources that will allow our strategy to succeed." And another, "Moreover, our troops need more open rules of engagement to do their job effectively." Another email, "Elections have consequences, and for our recent election, the consequences have been a major setback in the war on terror and a greater threat to terrorist attack at home." Still another, "Like Vietnam, our enemies view us as not having the stomach to fight a protracted war. If we withdraw, however, the credibility of the U.S., our military, and our assurances would be lost for years, probably decades." And another, "The overwhelming response among officers is that we must stay and finish what we have started. Many of these officers have built strong relationships with local Iraqi and Afghan citizens who want to raise their family in peace."
Representative John Shimkus, a Republican from Illinois. Ron Elving, this resolution specifically expresses support for troops. And let me read that section again. "Congressmen, Congress and the American people will continue to support and protect the members of the United States Armed Forces who are serving or who have served bravely and honorably in Iraq." So, Ron, are the Republicans on to something when they suggest that this resolution is just the first step toward defunding the war?
I would say no and yes, Paul. No, because the real debate here is not over a funding question. It's over whether or not to approve the president's decision to send an additional 20,000 combat troops or more. That's where the disagreement comes. There's no disagreement about the part about sending the current troops in Iraq everything that they need. That's not the question. The question is whether or not to disapprove of the president's policy change. On the other hand, they are on to something about where this debate is going next, and I think many of the Democrats would be the first to say so. And I think many of their supporters are disappointed, and we've heard this again and again from people who voted Democratic last fall or who opposed the war. They're disappointed that this resolution is non-binding and that it does not do anything to literally begin to withdraw our troops from Iraq.
Let's listen to one of many Democrats who say the resolution and itself do not undermine the troops. Here's Representative James McGovern of Massachusetts.
"Now, I have listened as many of my colleagues have come to the floor and said we must follow our leader and be quiet. Some have even suggested that those of us who support this resolution and want this war to end are doing a disservice to our troops. Mr. Speaker, for four long years, Congress has done absolutely nothing in the face of mistake after mistake after mistake in Iraq. None of us in this chamber have to wake up tomorrow in Baghdad or Fallujah or Tikrit. None of us have to wake up each morning and go on patrol in Anbar province. None of us in this chamber are in harm's way. But we are all responsible, all of us, just like the President, for assigning tens of thousands of our bravest servicemen and women to be referees in a sectarian civil war. If we truly want to protect our troops, if we truly are concerned with their safety and well-being, then bring them home and reunite them with their families. Newsweek columnist Anna Quinlan put it this way: there is no better way to support those fighting in Iraq than to guarantee that no more of them die in the service of political miscalculation. Mr. Speaker, the American people are way ahead of the politicians in Washington. Citizens of all political persuasions are sick and tired of the political spin and political posturing. Our focus should not be about saving face. Instead, it should be about saving lives. The people of this country have been misled, they have been deceived, and they have been lied to. Increasingly, people do not trust their government to tell the truth on the war. Mr. Speaker, I don't trust my government to tell me the truth about this war. There is no military victory to be had. The only hope is a political solution.
Democratic Representative James McGovern of Massachusetts. Another Democrat, Bill Pascrell of New Jersey, became even more upset.
Don't question our patriotism. Don't question our support or the American people's. Listen. And by the way, Madam Speaker, have we asked the Iraqis what they feel? Well, 80% of them want us out. Don't they count? Can't we ask and listen to at least the very people whose country we occupy, this sovereign nation? This is unbelievable.
That's Democrat Bill Pascrell of New Jersey. Ron Elving, as angry as Representative Pascrell may be, a number of Republicans have accused backers of this resolution of not having an effective alternative to President Bush's policy. Listening to this debate, is that criticism valid?
I suppose it depends on what you mean by effective alternative. If you're talking about an alternative that would be effective at bringing about the success of the overall Bush administration policy in Iraq, making the things happen there that the Bush administration set out as their aims, no, the Democrats are not proposing anything that would be either a slight increase or a smaller decrease or what have you, no tinkering that would change the policy. What the Democrats are proposing down the road, they're not talking about it so much in this particular week, is a reversal of the president's policy in Iraq, which would involve drawing down our troop strength there over the next year or two, possibly by the end of 2008, getting all American combat troops out. That's what the polls show most Americans support, getting all American troops out by the end of 2008.
But Republicans today and through the week have been consistently saying the Democrats have no plan of their own.
Not if by plan you mean another way to help President Bush's ideas succeed.
You know, the term stay the course has come up repeatedly in debate this week, and especially today. Each side is accusing the other of wanting to stay the course, either by supporting the troop surge or by not wanting to send in more troops. Now, stay the course was President Bush's term until last summer, and I was wondering if you could take us back to that moment when the phrase stay the course became a liability.
It gradually dropped out of the president's speeches. I'm sure that's because it was testing poorly in the president's own internal polling, and the data were showing that this was not a good phrase because people were so dissatisfied with what was going on in Iraq. Far from that now, the president likes to say and said in his interview with NPR last week, I'm one of those people who's dissatisfied with the way things are going in Iraq. If a pollster asked me, are you happy about what's going on in Iraq? I would say no. So no one wants to stay the course. But the question is the president sending more troops the way to deviate from the previous course, or is a reversal of the overall strategy in Iraq, which would involve withdrawing our troops from Iraq over a stated period of time, a year or two, is that the proper reversal of the course?
After 3 days of speeches on the House floor over this non-binding resolution disapproving the troop surge, I really have been struck by how the two sides seem to be talking past each other a lot of the time. There have really been only a few moments of what I would call true debate.
Absolutely, Paul. I think that's a very good observation. They are truly talking past each other most of the time. And not only are there very few people in the chamber except members who are waiting to speak and some members of their staff, there really aren't that many people watching the debate back at home, at least not in the sense of watching one speaker after another. What people will see at home is they will see edited little bites, maybe 30 seconds, 40 seconds, of their own congressman showing back home on their local television. And the congresspeople know that, and that's the audience they're really talking to.
I've also noticed that the House chamber itself is remarkably empty.
Even the galleries.
Listening to this radio program, it seems like there's a lot of action. In fact, there are very few people in the chamber, almost no one around, and you get the sense that members of Congress are coming into the chamber to make their speech, make their presentations, and then they leave.
And they aren't listening to the other speakers. I think one of the things some of us expect in a debate is a interchange, a rebuttal, some sense of tit-for-tat, and we're not getting that.
NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving. This is a special report from NPR News. I'm Paul Brown. We've been listening to excerpts from the continuing debate over a resolution that opposes President Bush's troop increase in Iraq. The non-binding resolution also expresses support for the troops. It does not address the issue of funding. With us is Ron Elving, NPR's Washington editor. And Ron, let's listen to two congressmen who's with views that are, to put it very mildly here, divergent. First, here's Republican Virgil Goode from Southern Virginia.
It's an honor to receive time from someone who served our nation in the finest way and who knows firsthand how harmful a resolution such as this can be to those in theater. We are in the middle of a four-day marathon here. While I cannot say that I agree with all of the actions of the president in dealing with Iraq, I will not be supporting H. Conrad 63. The eyes of the world are upon this house, and there will be commentary from the Middle East to the streets of small town America about what we do here over this four-day period, even though this resolution does not carry the weight of law. When the commentary begins in the Middle East, in no way do I want to comfort and encourage the radical Muslims who want to destroy our country and who want to wipe the so-called infidels like myself and many of you from the face of the earth. In no way do I want to aid and assist the Islamic jihadists who want the green flag of the crescent and star to wave over the Capitol of the United States and over the White House of this country.
That's Republican Virgil Goode of Virginia. Here's Democrat Elliot Engel of Southern New York State.
Al-Qaeda is certainly a threat. I'm a New Yorker. I will never, ever forget September 11th, 2001. And we have to go after Al-Qaeda. And we have to fight terrorism. But I believe that the war in Iraq has now become a distraction against the war on terror. So we say, by staying in Iraq, are we fighting the war on terror, or are we making it more difficult?
That's Democrat Elliot Engel of New York. Ron Elving, we have here a Republican whose district is far from the location of any terrorist attack and who sees the Iraq conflict as the central front in the war on terror, and a Democrat who represents the Bronx, mere miles from Ground Zero on 9/11, who feels the U.S. is hopelessly mired in Iraq and thus distracted from fighting the war on terrorism. Now, we've heard this sort of thing over and over the past 3 days, profoundly different views of the threat that America faces.
This is perhaps the crux of what makes all of this seem quite so discontinuous, that these Republicans and Democrats, and I exclude the dozen or so Republicans who have spoken in favor of the resolution, are seeing radically different universes. It seems that what the Republicans are describing is something like the Munich Conference of 1938, which they have frequently referred to, a test of wills, as they have frequently called it, where the two sides are simply deciding whether or not they're going to be the tougher and stick it out. And the two sides in their minds are the United States on the one hand and terrorism on the other. The Democrats are talking about something that is a little bit more visible to us on television. A situation in Baghdad where sectarian violence has spilled out of control and where it has reached the dimensions of a civil war and where the U.S. troops are no longer arrayed against a definable enemy, but where they are trying to, as many of the Democrats put it, referee a civil war.
Let's listen to some more excerpts from today's debate on the House floor. Here's a freshman Democrat from Minnesota, a National Guard veteran, Tim Walz of Minnesota.
Some have said that this debate sends a message to our enemies, and I would agree. The message our enemies hearing this week is that democracy in America is alive and well. The message that our enemy is hearing this week is that this nation will not live in fear of its own shadow and blindly give away those precious liberties that make this the greatest nation the world has ever known. The message our enemy is hearing this week is this nation is able and willing to adjust our tactics to focus on the true threats to our security, which come from Al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan, and by securing our ports and borders. The message they are hearing is that this nation is no longer willing to wage a war based on political ideology and failed policy. We will wage it on facts and reality. Many of my colleagues have spoken of the need to support our troops. You'll get no debate from me nor any other American. By implying that some don't support the troops based on nothing more than political posturing is cynical and divisive. For more than two decades, I served with soldiers, airmen, Marines, and not once did I ever see these brave men and women as anything other than patriots. I never saw them as a Democrat, a Republican, an Independent, or a Libertarian. Nor did they see me as anything but a fellow soldier.
That was Democrat Tim Walz of Minnesota. Here's the response from Republican Duncan Hunter, also a veteran and a presidential hopeful from California.
I would also say to my friend that if you think that the message is going to go across thousands of websites and communications the day after this vote is taken on terrorist websites is going to be our message is that that democracy is alive and well in the United States. I'm willing to take a bet on that. I don't think you'll see that. I think you'll see something else. You'll see the message that they think that this resolution, if it's passed, is the first note of retreat in the war against terror by the United States. That's what you'll see, and I'll be happy to take a bet on that one.
That's Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter of California. Here's Democrat Chris Carney of Pennsylvania, a Navy reservist. He worked as an intelligence analyst in the Pentagon in the run-up to the Iraq War. He's addressing suggestions by some Republicans that the debate itself gives aid and comfort to the enemy.
Our enemies are encouraged and emboldened by the successes that they have enjoyed already. We do not need to send 21,000 troops additional to reinforce this. Instead, we should be changing our focus. Rather than sending more American troops into combat, we should be training Iraqis to handle the jobs for themselves. For every Iraqi battalion we train, we need to bring an American battalion home. And our district sadly has lost 22 men in this war, brave troops who paid the ultimate sacrifice for their country. I rise today to honor them and also to stand up for the troops currently in combat. One of my own former students, a member of a Pencil Guard unit, told me how his unit had to scrounge through Iraqi junkyards for scrap metal to weld onto their trucks for more protection. Junkyards, scrap metal, where is the outrage that this administration has not given troops the protection that they need? Where is the outrage that our fine men and women, whose job it is to protect our nation, are scrounging through foreign junkyards for that protection? The troops have won the war, but the administration has failed to secure the peace.
Democrat Chris Carney of Pennsylvania. And here's Republican Andrew Crenshaw of Florida defending the president's troop surge.
Now, I know there are people in this chamber that think the plan is doomed from the very beginning. You don't think it'll work. And if that's your belief, you ought to do more than introduce a symbolic resolution and then stand here and pound the podium and hem and haw and make speeches and leap in front of the television cameras. And if you don't think the plan's going to work, if you think it's doomed to failure, then you ought to go even further and you ought to stand up and say, we admit defeat. It didn't work. We're not going to fund the war altogether anymore. We're going to withdraw. I'll tell you one thing, the plan is there. It may not be perfect, and quite frankly, it may not work. But it's there in every American. Democrats and Republicans alike ought to hope that this plan succeeds, because it may very well be our last best chance to prevent a catastrophic failure in Iraq. And if that happens, the disastrous effect won't just be felt in Iraq, won't just be felt by the people of the Middle East, but quite possibly will be felt by all Americans alike.
Republican Congressman Ander Crenshaw of Florida in debate over the Iraq resolution. Republican Sam Johnson of Texas, a Vietnam veteran and former POW, lashed out at Democrats for narrowing the scope of debate.
I really want to know if the Democrats insist they are supporting our troops when they wouldn't let me introduce my measure that mandates that Congress would support and fully fund the men and women in uniform. I'm positive that Democrats will attempt to cut funding as soon as the spending bills come up this spring, and maybe earlier, because there was a press conference earlier today that indicated exactly that, and fear what that means for our troops on the ground, for their morale. The reality is that President Bush realized he needed to change the course in Iraq, and that's why he worked with folks on the ground in Iraq to hear fresh ideas and came up with a new plan. The President wants change, and that's why he changed the rules of engagement, enabling our guys to shoot at any suspected terrorist. The President wants change, and that's why he removed political protections of all insurgents, so all the bad guys could be brought to justice regardless of who they knew or who they worked for. These ideas are huge breakthroughs and real solutions. These ideas represent fresh starts and new plans. What is the Democrat plan to move forward and win? They don't have one. 36 hours of political grandstanding, 9 binding resolutions, and petty posturing. They are not proposing solutions. They are not even encouraging new ideas. In fact, they stopped them, like when they squashed my amendment. Many hope that the troop surge is the beginning of the end. We should all want that if it gets the job done. Yet the Democrats just say no. You know, the time will come when you can put the money behind these 9 binding resolutions, and you better believe we'll be watching and calling for those funding cuts loud and clear. America needs to know cutting funds for our troops in harm's way is not a remedy, it's a ruse.
Republican Sam Johnson of Texas. Ron Elving, Representative Johnson says the Democrats are actually restricting the scope of debate. Does he have a point?
I would say they're not restricting the scope, they're restricting the focus. And he surely has a point in saying that they're restricting the focus. They specifically did not want to have the debate be about funding. They specifically wanted to have the resolution be drafted so as to pass. They wanted to attract as many votes for it as possible and have the tougher controversy over funding, troops that are already in harm's way, further down the road, and have the funding question about putting money behind the surge of the 20,000-plus combat troops take place a little further down the road. They're narrowing the focus of the debate. The scope, of course, is up to the individual members, and they've taken it out to the max.
The debate today, above all, seemed to be about support for the troops. Which side does more here to honor their sacrifice? We heard from lots of veterans. Where does that come down?
Well, I think in the end that the veteran members on both sides of the aisle, among the Democrats, there were a number of freshmen that they put forward as veterans of the military, including some people who had worked in the Defense Department during the War on Terror years. On both sides, they had lots of people who had served in uniform back as far as World War II, Korea, certainly many from the Vietnam War, and by and large, they hewed the line that their party was hewing. They used their experience in the military to reinforce the point that their party was generally making, whether they were seeing the world in one set of terms, say that World War II analogy, or whether they were seeing the war more in terms of what people see happening in Iraq since the invasion 4 years ago.
Well, as we wrap up today's program, let's listen to a couple of more excerpts that perhaps reflect the most basic arguments for and against the Iraq resolution. Republican Todd Akin of Missouri is against it.
This seems to be kind of a curious proposition. almost a nonsensical proposition. How do you say you support and then say, but we don't want to send them any reinforcing troops? Certainly we say that we want to give them body armor, we want to give them up-armored Humvees, we want to send them tanks. But the most important thing that you need sometimes is troops, is some other troops to support you. So we're saying, oh, we want support, but we don't want to support you. I mean, picture Davy Crockett at the Alamo. He's got his back to the wall. Sandy Anna's got thousands of troops. So he gets his BlackBerry out. He checks with Congress. Congress says, hey, Davy, we really support you, but we're not going to send you any troops. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Now, this, as I said, this resolution has two parts. It says we support you, but we're not really going to send any troops over. The third part is what concerns me the most. As congressmen, we have the responsibility to listen, to pay attention. If somebody has a better idea, that's just fine. Send your better idea forward. We're ready to be taught or to learn. If there's a better way to approach Iraq and the situation there, good. But this proposal has no positive suggestion whatsoever. It just says we support and we don't support.
That's Republican Todd Akin of Missouri, and here's Democrat Arthur Davis of Alabama.
Several of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle have said that this resolution carries no weight, no legal or moral force. I will tell you the weight that this carries, my friends. 24 hours from now, 65% of the members of this chamber will send a signal to the American people that we have heard their voices. That is a powerful thing. When I think of all the people in this country who sent a clear signal last November 7th that they were not heard. And I end with this point. A number of my colleagues in this debate, our adversaries in this debate, have said that there's a group in Washington. There's a group of people on the left. Some of you say there's a group on the other side of the aisle who want to defund or who don't somehow have the strength, the fiber to support our troops. I remind you, my friends, your disagreement is not with the Democratic caucus. It is not even with the 50 or so in your ranks who will vote for this resolution. It is a disagreement with the 65% of this country. It is a disagreement with the people in my very conservative state of Alabama, 60% of whom now think this war is wrong, and who say to me, Mr. Davis, why on earth have we taken side in a battle between radical Islamic fundamentalists? Why is a blood feud between Shia and Sunni worth the spilling of American blood? They're the ones you're saying wrong. They're the ones you're saying lack strength. So, Mr. Speaker, I simply end by thanking my colleagues who had the good judgment to be right about the futility of this war from the outset, by thanking the colleagues who were wrong 5 years ago and are right today, and by asking one last thing. The President of the United States, who brags that he's watched none of this debate, if he could only hear just one plea from this debate, that he listened to some fact, some evidence. Because, Mr. Speaker, this is the problem that we face with this president. No set of facts, no set of truths can tell him that he is wrong. Tomorrow, this chamber will tell him so.
Democrat Arthur Davis of Alabama speaking in favor of the Iraq resolution. The non-binding resolution disapproves of President Bush's troop increase in Iraq, and it expresses support for U.S. troops. Ron Elving, very briefly here, what can we expect in the next day of debate? How many Republicans will join the Democrats in supporting this resolution, and will any Democrats vote against it?
First of all, Paul, I don't think we'll hear a lot new in the debate. We'll hear a reiteration of what we've heard the first 3 days. How many Republicans? You just heard Arthur Davis say it would be 50. I think that's probably a little on the high side. We know about a dozen for sure. The low end we've heard from Republican leaders is 24. I would say 36, 48. That would be the high end. About 50 is probably putting it at the highest extent. Democrats voting back the other way, we haven't heard any say they would, but we could expect that there would be something in the single digits.
Thanks very much, Ron Elving, for being with us. Ron Elving is NPR's Washington editor. This special report was directed by Gwen Uten, edited by Martha Wexler, and produced by Giselle Grayson with help from Katia Dunn. The sound engineers were Carlos Gomez and Bill Deputy. Thanks also to NPR's Stu Seidel, who has coordinated production of these reports. I'm Paul Brown, and this is NPR News.